Labas and good afternoon. This is Cast. This is David Thus, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial, and of course, live streaming audio over the internet at ktym.com. The strains of a tango. Whenever I hear a tango, I think of class dancing, people in tuxedos, women in long gowns dancing on a ballroom floor sometime in the 1920s or 30s. And that's what our very own dance ensemble, Retro, is all about. The Retro is run by Sigita Barisiana, and they're celebrating 10 years performing for you. They happened to perform for the first time 10 years ago at the opening of the L.A. Los Angeles Lithuanian Fair, and they're going to kick off the Los Angeles Fair weekend by performing for you on October 4th at 7 o'clock at night at the Cicada Club, at downtown Los Angeles at the Oviatt Building. The Oviatt Building is a classic Art Deco building. What a setting for this event. Write down this number and get more information from Sigita, 661-645-2465. We want you to put on your ballroom clothes, have the women dress up in their finest, the men in a coat and tie, and come on down and watch Retro perform for you. 10 years in the making, a wonderful show, and a great dinner, too, at this venue, the Oviatt Building downtown. Once again, 661-645-2465 is the number for Sigita for more info. You can't beat it. Wonderful dinner, Northern Italian cuisine, great atmosphere at the Oviatt Building, and a classy performance by our very own Retro. 661-645-2465. Today, we have a couple of guests, and one of them is Kimo Arbas. Kimo will talk a little bit about the pre-Christian faith of Lithuania, known as Romuva. Have a couple of announcements to make, and a little later, time allotting, his mother will be on. Her name is Viola, Elena Arbas, and Viola is visiting here for the first time in about 11 years. She makes her home in Lithuania, so the mother and son visit have nothing to do with one another except that they drove here together in the same car while she was in town. So you may enjoy that. Viola recently received a great honor from the state of Lithuania, and it is the Order of the Knight of the Cross for merits to Lithuania. So she received the civilian honor, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the program. But first, this, what draws people to Lithuania? What draws tourists to Lithuania? Could it be the pretty girls? Well, according to several sources, the main problem in attracting foreign tourists to Lithuania is the scarcity of flights, so say travel agents, who have the job of promoting Lithuania abroad. They say that visitors from different countries come to Lithuania for different reasons. There's just so much for you to do in Lithuania and all sorts of unusual things, so much that the British are surprised to say what a brilliant trip they had to Lithuania. So promoting food, spas, and medical tourism is a challenge for agents in London, bearing in mind that people have little time to travel, says Alison Cryer, head of the integrated marketing team on tourism in the UK. They represent Lithuania. She points out that it is great that budget airlines fly to Lithuania because there's so many of them in the UK. But what's needed, she says, is a national carrier. When there's a national carrier, there's a different client market, one that isn't inclined to use budget airlines, she adds. Now, according to Cryer, 80% of the tourists from the UK head to Vilnius, the other 20% to the beach in Lithuania. It's mostly couples in the 35 to 55 age bracket that go to Lithuania, and they make up just a little more than half of all those who come. Now, Maria Grebnikova, who represents Lithuania in Russia, said it's not easy to promote Lithuania to Russians. Most of them don't know the difference between Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. Our core purpose is to make a distinction between the three Baltic states. Our prospects are looking good because this year, 14 visa centers open throughout Russia, and so Lithuania can compete with Latvia, which readily just gives issues away. The most popular destination for Russians are Vilnius and Trakai, she said, and Russians love Lithuanian beer. I've received feedback from people that they find the Lithuanian part of the Curonian Peninsula more beautiful than the Kaliningrad part. Druskininka is becoming an attraction, as are various activities such as cycling and, of course, beer tours. I think it's very important for tourists from Russia because they can go to another country and try the local beer. Over 50% of the tourists from Russia visited Lithuanian cities, primarily Vilnius. That's why more promotion of Lithuania resorts like Druskininka and the Curonian Spit are planned. Miguel Uresti, who represents Lithuania in Spain, says culture is the incentive for most people who visit Lithuania. According to Uresti, it's this reason that Spanish don't go to Lithuania only because they want to see the capitals of the other Baltic states and learn about their heritage. The Italian market is like the Spanish market. Our clients are interested mostly in culture and art tours, and Vilnius is part of that in the Baltic capitals. This is why, according to Bignoni, it is mostly Italians over the age of 40 that visit Lithuania. We're targeting young people, of course, because we believe there's a lot of potential there for tourism and that they can spend their short holidays in Lithuania. She also asserts that Italians are being told not only about Lithuania's capital of Vilnius, but also about Lithuanian beer, which is not known at all to most Italians. Situation in France is the same as Spain and Italy. People are interested in culture and history. They also seek the unspoiled beauty. The French like visiting European cities, and so those who have seen Vienna and Prague also want to see Eastern European capitals, and they often choose Vilnius. Miroslav Bebak represents Lithuania and Poland, and he said that Poles visit Lithuania mostly because of their shared common history and, of course, their common religion of Catholicism. In May, we conducted a survey, and 80% of Polish tourists say the most important reason to visit Lithuania was the religion. That's the first reason, and the other two are culture and history. 20% of tourists from Poland visit Lithuania to go to spas. Most of them visit Vilnius and make it obligatory to visit the Gates of Dawn or Oschros Varte. Now, the Germans, yes, those Germans, they like going on package tours. And so around 40% of all holidays sold are package tours, said Suvi Makinen, who represents Lithuania in German. She notes that these packages are widespread in travel agencies. Prospective tourists are told that Lithuania is a country of nature and historical and cultural heritage. Of course, Germany has historic ties with Klaipeda, and so it becomes a destination in itself for Germans, especially if they speak German. Yet not all of what Lithuania has to offer in terms of nature is well known. Likewise, the spas are largely unknown. That is, they are unknown to Germans. Otherwise, anyone who's initiated into the spa culture of Central and Eastern Europe will know about the wonderful, beautiful modern spas in Druskininka, you know, specifically. That's like, what, an hour and a half outside of Vilnius, and you have some of the most fantastic spa, mud baths, massages, hot rocks, all kinds of herbal treatments in the world. I've gone off on a tangent here, but definitely, if you go to Lithuania, get out of Vilnius, take a couple of days, and go relax in Druskininka. But anyway, there I am, being a travel agent myself, promoting Lithuania, as we always do here on Independent Lithuanian Radio. We'll be right back in a minute and talk with Kimo Arbas. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we have a special treat for you today. We have in the studio with us Kimo Arbas. And Kimo is a vidilla. Do you know what a vidilla is? Kimo, what's a vidilla? Tell the people.
Oh, hi, everybody. A vidilla is basically a person who performs community rites such as baptisms, weddings, funerals, blessings in the indigenous Lithuanian faith.
And everybody's thinking, I never saw Kimo do any of that at St. Casimir's, and you just said it, the indigenous Lithuanian faith, which is a paganism known as...
Well, paganism in English is not really an accurate term. It's problematic because pagan is more of a derogatory term for anything that is not Islam, Judaism, or Christianity. So, you know, Buddhism is considered paganism, everything. But it is an indigenous worldview. It's not a religion. It's not out conquesting. It tolerates and respects other religions, like Gediminas had said. It's just another, basically in a nutshell, it's basically another path to the same thing. So we respect all other religions. We have no conflict with anyone. In some parts of Europe, like Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, when they say pagonis or pagan, people know that means just indigenous worldview or indigenous traditions, faith, etc., etc. There's no hierarchy in it. If someone considers themselves to be a member, they are. It's because no matter what, it's your personal connection to the universe, God, the gods, however you want to phrase it. It's your personal relationship. You don't have to go through me to get to God
right.
or anyone else, because when you pass on, you have to deal with it yourself. And so with the indigenous Baltic worldview or indigenous faith, it's very interesting because it has the same roots as Hinduism and the same roots as Buddhism. We even use the same virtue, dharna, to live in harmony. It's also a path, a way of life, being in harmony with yourself, with your ancestors, with your neighbors, with nature, with everything around you. That's the only way something can be sustainable.
I mean, I think young people are interested in it.
Yeah, I think so too, and older people too. Like the community in Lithuania, it's professors, it's students, it's laymen, it's intelligentsia, it's everybody together. And, you know, if you look at it, basically the main virtues are the same. Like I was saying, Lithuania has somehow preserved, like a mosquito in amber, has preserved the indigenous faith, the indigenous language. This term dharna, which means harmony, way of life, etc., etc., in Hinduism they call it dharma, and in Buddhism they also call it dharma, which is uncanny because it means exactly the same thing. So it's very, very ancient, and when you look at it, it goes more into what is a human and how humans have learned to live together and with nature and in communities and things like that. So it's very positive.
Now, how did you get involved in this? We're sitting here in Los Angeles, but I know you spent a lot of time in Lithuania, and somehow you wound up being this vidilla. So tell us about that.
Oh, well, back in 1998, I'd been looking for these guys for a long time. I lived in Lithuania in 94 for about a year. And I finally found them in 1998 when I was studying in the Berlin University of the Arts. And it was the World Congress of Ethnic Religions, the first one. And people from ethnic religions all over the place. There was gypsies there was Germanic, Scandinavians, people from India. They all got together and they talked about, you know, what the trials and tribulations of indigenous faith and preserving it and keeping it on. And so we kind of made a friendship there. Well, I got to meet the Trinkunai. So I got in with, met these people, who are lovely people. I then was baptized in the indigenous faith, which doesn't negate my Catholic baptism or anything. I mean, maybe the Catholics might feel that, but I think the new Pope is a little bit more tolerant now, a little bit more relaxed, more liberal. But what it did was it just kind of connected and sort of officialized my feelings and my heart and spirit was connected with it. So I was baptized in 1998. And then in 2005, I was appointed vidilla by Jonas Trinkunas. So that means that I have the right to do baptisms, weddings, and funerals in the indigenous traditions.
And let's fast forward. You're here now, you're pretty much in Los Angeles right now. That's where you're settled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you're performing some of these events and functions here.
Oh,
so
right,
what do we have coming up?
Oh, we have Ligadinis, which is going to be this month, the 22nd or the 21st.
Ligadinis is the equinox.
Yeah, the day and night are equal, which is very important for when you live. You know, all these holidays, holy days, are placed in specific astronomical points. They're shifted off a little bit by the calendar, a little bit incorrect, but the actual astronomical dates, that's the actual center point of those holidays, and they're to get you in touch with the Earth, your ancestors, spirits, the gods, and to honor your ancestors who've lived this and developed this and preserved this treasure.
And when are we doing this?
This is going to be this month on the 21st or the 22nd.
So that's over the next couple of weeks, ladies and gentlemen, depending on when you're listening to this program.
Right. It'll be very interesting for people who are interested in Indo-European roots or European roots, sort of the understanding of the cosmos from the ancient science or ancient wisdom. And, it's
Where and when?
Oh, we have our Alcacanus is near the Griffith Park Observatory. Everyone is welcome, regardless of faith, nationality, whatever. Just as long as they're respectful and they don't do any, you know, preaching. They're there to honor what we're doing.
So where do I park my car if I've never been there?
The tunnel, the west side of the tunnel that's below
the
observatory. I have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Romovana. Romova, North America. Mm-hmm. And part of my duties was to be the head vaidilla for North America.
Yeah, Romova is actually the name of the faith.
Indigenous faith community mm-hmm. of Lietuva. Which is, the head is Jonas Trinkunas, the Kunis. Okay.
So this is going to be the 21st, mm-hmm. which is a Saturday. I don't have my calendar.
I'm not exactly sure right now, but...
The 21st is a Saturday, yes, it's a Saturday. And what time should we be there?
About 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I'll have all the specific details with the intersection everywhere where we're meeting on the Facebook page.
Okay, and final thing, Lithuanian, English, does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. The songs are in Lithuanian, of course. But, we'll be speaking in English because there might be non-Lithuanians there as well. And also, since the time I've been made of Vaidilla, I've also done about 6 baptisms and 1 wedding so far. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can come and meet Kimo Arbas, the Vaidilla, who will be presiding over the equinox in Griffith Park near the observatory off the west side of the tunnel. On the 21st, and we'll keep reminding you to show up.
It's also Baltic Unity Day, so that's the unity between Prussians, Lithuanians, and Latvians as we had to fight for our survival in the Middle Ages against the Crusaders.
All right. Another thing to celebrate, commemorate, and remember. Thanks again, Kimo.
Achulobai, Laiminge.
So, ladies and gentlemen, put it in your calendars 2 weeks from tonight at about 6 o'clock up there by the observatory in Griffith Park to commemorate the equinox under the guidance of our very own Vaidilla, Kimo Arbas. And now we're going to take a short break, and after that we're going to talk to Viola Elena Arbas. And that just happens to be Kimo's mother. But the topic has nothing to do with Vaidillas or the ancient faith of Romova. It has to do with her returning to the United States after 11 years and having recently just received the Order of the Knight's Cross for merits to Lithuania from the Lithuanian government. A great honor. Again, we'll be talking to Viola Arbas in just a few seconds. Stay tuned. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for staying tuned in. As promised before the break, we have with us a special guest in the studio this afternoon, and her name is Viola Arbas. Hi, Viola. How are you?
Hi, Caste.
Long time no see. The last time I believe we saw each other was in Kaunas in 1990, was it? Or was it a little later?
I'm not certain. I saw you later in Vilnius.
Well,
for sure, in 92.
Viola, ladies and gentlemen, is one of those people who happened to be in Lithuania during all the turmoil of independence. The late 80s, the early 90s, and when she went there and got caught up in it, unlike me, she stayed. tell us about that trip, that first trip to Lietuva.
My first trip to Lietuva was with my father and with my son, and that was in 1989. 87, I believe, just right after Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
I just absolutely was smitten with the country. I wanted to know more. At the suggestion of my mother, I took a job to teach English at the newly reconstructed Vytautas Magnus University.
In Kaunas.
In Kaunas, yes. And a small group of people from Southern California went there to rebuild this University of Humanities. Its primary focus was to be humanities. It had been dismantled during the Soviet years. And I arrived in September of 1990, and by late December and early January, the heat was on. The Soviets were kicking up a lot of dust. And you may or may not remember from the history that thousands and thousands of Lithuanians were
in the streets.
In the streets. We're not only just randomly in the streets, but were making human barricades in front of objects of strategic importance, mm-hmm. such as television, radio, telephone company, all the press building, the government building,
media.
The parliament building. And I was caught up there on the night of January 13th, which mm-hmm. we all know from our history lessons. I think that did something to me, frankly speaking, mm-hmm. psychologically. I felt I could not leave.
Right, like you were
needed.
For
some reason mm-hmm. I had to stay or something terrible would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. After January the 13th, which you know, the tanks came, and any of us who were out there were fully prepared to die. It didn't really matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't die, thank heavens. Other people did, 13, but yeah. I didn't. So on we went. I mm-hmm. got back to Kaunas. Kaunas was not taken. The rumors had gone out that Kaunas was also gone, but it was there. And the local TV station was working, and we had high hopes that it would be picked up by satellite. And so, therefore, there was an effort to translate all the news into English. Lucia Boszkowska started it. I came in there to relieve her. There were not very many people speaking English at that time. That continued on for some time, and I don't remember exactly when, and by that time we organized the very best English students, because I was teaching at the university, and I was teaching English.
Mm-hmm.
They were in charge of sitting down and translating the written news, and they were reading it over the radio. I wish I had written down their names or had a list, mm-hmm. because they really deserve a special award and special recognition. And I believe several of them are still in illness. They wave at me and say, "Hi, teacher." It's just a little bit too long, and I don't remember their names, and I'm very sorry for that. Because, to tell you the truth, when I was honored with this medal, I think, well, first I cried a lot. Second, I felt all of a sudden realizing how many people deserved medals and deserved recognition, and that included those students who did all of this for free. This was completely volunteer work.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see many people over here like that, because you have a completely different breed of people that come over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I guess, a topic of a different conversation.
Yeah,
they are not the heroes, generally speaking.
The mindset at that point that I discovered was that a lot of people still looked at us, and I'm different than you are. I didn't stay, but still, we were told by the local people there that Caste, the difference is you can leave, and we're stuck here. And at that time, that's what they still believed. So they had to believe that they had so much more invested in what went on in 1989, 90, and 91. In their minds, it was a much bigger risk than it was for us. It took them years to understand that they could come and go as they please, too, which is what they're doing now. But again, that's a different topic.
You may not have stayed to take a look at the kinds of places those people worked in. The horrendous factories,
mm-hmm.
the noise, the filth, the whole Soviet system. They work there every single day, many of them for a lifetime, gritting their teeth, getting through it, surviving, and just to see a day of hopefully liberation.
Yeah, they
not for the people who built it, but for their children, who are now very often totally ungratefully running around without knowing what they're doing.
Yeah, running to Ireland, perhaps. You have mentioned the medal, and we talked about it in a little introduction I did before.
Oh, okay,
before,
okay.
Right, that you were rewarded by the state of Lithuania with the Order of the Knight's Cross.
Well, I was honored. Let's say. I don't know about rewarded.
Right. Honored with that award of the Knight's Cross for merits to Lithuania. And that was specifically for doing that translation work during the Sosutivika.
Yes.
During the events of January.
For a length of time afterwards.
Now,
the reason I clarified the rewarded, because so many people have asked me how much money did I get. And believe me, there's no money. I had to pay for my own trip to go and receive my honor. But I was very honored, so I'm just clarifying that.
I understand. Now, let's go back there to those events in January. When were you able to, so to speak, take a breath and say, okay, this is done. We've got to move to the next phase. We've won. When would you say that you felt like you finished phase one of your work, if we should
call
it?
I'm not finished.
You're not finished yet, right?
Well, because there's no distinct end. Mm-hmm. You know, life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many dangers, really, for a length of time. You remember on July 31st, the Medininka.
Right.
I mean, there was no easy breath of fresh air.
But then the coup came in Moscow. Were you able to take a breath then?
No. I was actually in Russia without permit.
Yeah, without permit, and all of a sudden Yeltsin standing on a tank, right?
Yes, and that was spooky. That's a whole other story, and I came back, and everything was operating like life was going on as normal. I was just so glad to be back in Liatova. But, yes, then during the coup, that was pretty much cinched the liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreign countries began recognizing us. And there was an onslaught of that.
Mm-hmm.
More Lenins were toppled after that. I mean, all the Lenins in Kaunas were gone when I arrived in Lithuania. But Vilnius still had its Lenin and Klaipeda. So those guys went down.
Well, you had to at some point in time now say to yourself that, am I going back to the United States or am I staying here? Did that ever even occur to you? You just stayed.
Oh, sure. It occurred to me because one way or another, I spent many years here, many fond things, people that I missed, things that I missed. I did return in 1996.
Yes, 1996, 17 years ago. We're going to continue our conversation with Viola Arbas next week. We've about run out of time this week here on Independent Lithuanian Radio. I'm Kęstutis Reividas. Thanks again for tuning in to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. We hope you enjoyed our program this week and hope you continue to support and listen to us here again at Independent Lithuanian Radio. Bye-bye.